used to have a policy of containment of China, and now as a result of my trip to China and our relationship with China, we no longer have a policy of containment, and therefore the danger of the Chinese continuing to fuel everything from subversion to aggression in Asia is bigger than it was previously. And I said, Mr. Webb, I hard for me to understand that. Do you think that we can't have more influence from within than from without? And then also pointing out, we still have a policy of containment. The Shanghai Communique specifically says, right, specifically says that there will not be the use of force in the area. So the policy, we now have a policy of containment. Coupled with talks with them directly, which I think gives them, gives much greater security to everybody, to the Indonesians, to the Thais, to the Cambodians, to the Vietnamese, right? That's the point we need to make. And I have to be defensive about it, because some of the hawks, and I am, of course, the super hawk of everybody, as everybody knows, but some of the less sophisticated hawks have made this same point. And two, of course, picks it up out of those damn, probably Dimmitt events or something, say, which is to me curious. And on the other side of the country, we've got an asshole like Joe Kraft making the same point, knowing better, saying, well, the reason this is a bad deal is because we have the opening to China, and that, therefore, has raised, has let down the bars, and has endangered everybody in Asia. On the contrary, the American dialogue with China is a hell of a lot greater potential, shall we say, not restraint, but incentive for the Chinese to behave and for us to have a dialogue.
What do the Chinese think we wouldn't resist if they resorted to military bullets? Well, anyway, I thought a little of that with so you know what I'm thinking. I don't know. So the military problem is really, to all practical purposes, unlimited replacement that we can use, subject to the maintain at present level of the armed forces, subject to the advice and consent of the Congress. That's right, but the agreement permits it. Then there is a chapter that deals with the return of BOWs and missing in action, which will be carried out at the same time frame as the withdrawal of our forces in the same ratio. And they may be held responsible also for the return of prisoners and other captured personnel in large Cambodia. They claim there is nobody in Cambodia, but they are making themselves responsible for that. They haven't given us the figure. They'll do that today, but this of the time. We have separated in the agreement that this was one of the bloodiest battles we had, the issue of some 38,000 political prisoners in the South.
But that's now
from the issue of American POW. That is to say, we have a provision in the agreement according to which the political prisoners in the South are going to be negotiated between the two South Vietnamese parties. While for the others, there's a flat commitment that they must be released within a 2 month period. All military prisoners, all Americans, military or civilian. But the political prisoners in the South are made the subject of a separate negotiation between the two South Vietnamese parties. That's important to keep in mind also, that we're asking ourselves, does you have any assets to negotiate with the North Vietnamese or with the PRG? the government of the United States and the government of the Democratic Republic of Vietnam undertake to respect the following principles with respect to South Vietnam. One, South Vietnamese people's right of self-determination is sacred and inalienable and shall be respected by all countries. Two, the South Vietnamese people shall decide themselves the political future of South Vietnam through free and democratic elections under international supervision. Three, foreign countries shall not impose any political tendency or personality on the South Vietnamese people. So you have here a very explicit recognition by the North Vietnamese of the separate identity of the South Vietnamese. It undertaken as an obligation. Then there is some general government the objectives, democratic liberties, national reconciliation. Then we come to this paragraph, to the section that deals with the Committee of National Reconciliation. And let me explain that for 1 minute. When we started these negotiations,
I think I should say why this is more important for you to understand. I had a very long meeting yesterday, 2.5 hours. I was just speaking out and I read this communication letter from you. And he sent half a letter on this thing. Now, he said in his letter, and I think we've got to understand what the argument is, he says in his letter, that this provision is basically a camouflage imposition of a coalition government in South Vietnam. And I got quite direct with I said, doesn't affect the conduct of foreign affairs in South Vietnam. Of course it does. Does it affect the conduct of domestic affairs? As far as elections are concerned, and I agree, we'll take over, and political structure, etc., it affects them only if certain other conditions are met, and only if there is a unanimous vote and few of them veto. Now, good God, if I sit there with a veto over something, I think I am staying in power. So in other words, what we have here, what I want you to want us to get right now, the fundamentals. As far as South, the first thing is ceasefire, that's good. And we have to recognize that the geography is distinguished from the people. We're 90% of the people in Africa are under Vietnamese control now, right? But still the VC here. But the government of Vietnam remains in place, Q remains in place. They conduct the foreign policy, they conduct the domestic policy, and what this is about is not about the government, it is about basically reconciliation, elections, and so forth and so on, and that all depends on unanimous vote. Is that a rough statement of what it is?
Right. But of course, in reconciliation,
police and military got over the important
thing. On July 19th, when we resumed negotiations, their proposal was you had to resign. The army and police had to be disbanded. All political prisoners had to be released. A coalition government had to be set. be held at the time of these elections, they have determined that. That's decided by the annex negotiations between the Saigon government and the NLF. In other words, this committee, which is appointed, operates by unanimity, supervises elections that you first have to agree to in a separate forum. The committee doesn't come into being for 3 months. It isn't formed the day you leave it aside. It's formed 3 months afterwards. Now, it's inconceivable how such a committee could be considered a government. And how it could be considered a coalition government. That Chu has a double veto. First, he's got to agree on election. He doesn't agree on elections. This committee has nothing to do. After he agrees on election, his people on the committee have a veto over the procedures by which the elections are carried out. And that is the only task the committee has that's concrete. All the other stuff is meaningless. Now, that is very off from the demand of an unconditional coalition government to a committee of national reconciliation, which frankly is I want. And when you read the liberal press here, that's what they're saying. They're saying it can't work. Dave is right. We don't want it to work.
Was it the Economist that did that?
I am so elect. We're going to say this thing can't work. That's right. If it can't work, the Q government stays. We don't want it to work. And
in this room.
I mean, it's an eye-wash thing. It's a face-saving fig leaf. And what I would like to see is not, if we have trouble explaining it to Jews, what I would like to know is how Hanoi is explaining it to Manhattan. Here she's fought for 10 years to get a share of the power in South Vietnam. And what has she got? She's got a membership on a committee that has no power and no functions.
And the main thing here is that we'll get the state to you my thing, they will. There's a whole bill of a problem there, you deal with there, and that's not enough. So, the point is that as this thing evolves, for God's sake, let's have the military, at least our military, stand up and be damn proud of this thing. You see, General, it's a thing that you did for going out there. We cannot stand here and say, well, you cannot join our... The people, really, who are knocking this thing, curiously enough, are some of those who have been the most violent opponents of Q. And he can't understand. The reason they're not is that they realize it keeps them in power. They realize that all that we fought for has been, at least much of what we fought for, has been gained.
Right.
You can't.
Yes. We originally should be talking about it at all now.
No. I mean, when the deal is made, when this deal is made, there can't be anything but solidarity because it's a deal.
Yes, that's it. And if you go to the background of the statement that the DMZ is not bound, then this may have it.
But I'll come to that in the next section. That's in the next section. That deals with the reunification of Vietnam. That says, first, that the reunification of Vietnam shall be carried out through peaceful means as a result of discussion, without coercion or annexation by either party, without military pressure. Then, about the demilitarized zone, it says, it uses the exact language of the Geneva Agreement, which is that the military demarcation line between the two zones is provisional and not inspector. And then, the rest of that chapter, those are the key provisions of that chapter. The next chapter deals with international machinery. I don't want to try your patience by going through all the provisions, but briefly, actually, I must say, the chapter on international machinery is three times as long as the chapters on the political provisions. What it provides in brief is two-party military provisions for those provisions that apply only to the two South Vietnamese, four-party military provisions for those provisions that apply to all four parties, and over it all an international commission to which automatically disagreements of the other parties go, as well as that it has the right, as well as this international commission has the right to conduct independent investigations. In other words, it does not have to wait for these lower bodies to appeal to it. But as you just know, there are going to be many issues between the parties which can be perhaps settled between the parties. And that's why we have to do it for party commissions. So it's a pretty elaborate machinery. And one of the changes we're getting as a result of the current negotiations is that in the agreement it always said that this machinery goes into effect immediately. But we didn't have the protocol to negotiate. Now we're going to insist that the protocol setting up the international commission, the four-party commission, the two-party commission, be signed on the same day this agreement is signed, so that the international force and the machinery of the can go into action simultaneously. So we will have international supervision going into effect upon the signature of the agreement. The next section deals with Cambodian laws. And that has the following parts. One, it involves an explicit reaffirmation of the 1954 agreement on Cambodia and the 1962 agreement on Laos, and the commitment that the provisions of these agreements, as they apply to the parties signed, be respected. In other words, the troops, this means troops, there can be no foreign troops in Cambodia and Laos. It means that their territory is inviolable and has to be respected. And the troops have to be withdrawn. Second, there's a commitment that the parties signing this agreement will not use the territory of Laos or the territory of Cambodia to encroach on the sovereignty and security of one another or of other countries. In other words, the base areas have to be closed up. Third, there's a provision that foreign troops have to be withdrawn from Cambodia and Laos. The other provisions are general gobbledygook.
Yes, but this section is quite significant.
This section is of tremendous significance. And fortunately, this has to say this room. There is an inside understanding.
Yeah, I was
going to say there will be a formal ceasefire in Laos within 30 days of the signature of this agreement. I mean, there's a formal understanding in writing. It's not part of this agreement, but it's a separate written understanding. And we will get that reduced. We think next year should be 15 days.
He talks to that very clever fellow, Savant. I mean, we've always managed to like speak with the Pacific chairman today. He heard this. He said, well, I can't understand that. Why anybody, President or anybody else, is raising questions. This is a complete capitulation by our Vietnam. He knows.
It is.
Now, of course, when you talk about complete capitulation, we don't have unconditional surrender in the terms that we had in World War II or World War I. We can't do the things that we did then to bring it about. But in terms of what we have done, this is quite an achievement. And I think we've got to talk that way. You see what I mean? Now, when I say, well, I mean,
talked about, well, he said they could still commit this. And your point was well taken, they might get it $5,000, but they could get it $50,000.
That was, of course, the key point. But the
main about these forces that are in the south is that if they deny they are there, then the situation, the provisions with regard to reinforcement, or shall we say replacement, which provides to both North and South Vietnam, does not apply to replacement insofar as forces that are not in South Vietnam from the North. Because they aren't there.
There's another point, Mr. President. Replacement applies only to material. Replacement does not apply to personnel. They cannot get a flat prohibition against introducing personnel. There is a provision for replacement of material. But personnel cannot really be introduced.
Well, the replacement of material for North Vietnamese forces in South Vietnam is impossible because there are no forces in South Vietnam.
No, but they could produce a tax instead of sending a new one for the old one. That they can do without saying it's a North Vietnamese tax. But it is not true that this agreement legalizes the presence of North Vietnamese forces. They have read into their record long statements saying there are no North Vietnamese forces in the South. There are only South Vietnamese forces and South Vietnamese who had gone north and returned to the South again. Of course, this is an outrageous, filthy lie. But from a legal point of view, it means that there is nothing in here that legalizes the presence of North Vietnamese forces, nor do they claim that they legally have a right to have North Vietnamese forces there. And therefore, we retain the right to claim aggression if North Vietnamese forces are there. And therefore, we have the right, under this agreement, to take action if the president should so decide.
So, Henry, even if they cheat a little bit on that, two can take care of it. That's what that army was built up for.
Sure.
Can't sit on your ass and basically have some good, but you got to.
But there is no way they can engage in a massive infiltration into the South without massively violating explicit provisions of the agreement. They'd have to violate the DNC, they'd have to violate the provisions with respect to Cambodia and Laos, and they'd have to violate the provision against the introduction of personnel. So that the argument that some South Vietnamese are making that this gives them no legal protection is nonsense.
Well, or the argument that was made yesterday, went up to the effect that the agreement must at least have provisions so that there will be a legal basis for us to react in the event that they start hostilities again. That's nonsense. My God, we've got a legal basis all over the place, right?
You
don't have to go back to the seal thing, you know, which was a very flimsy thing to go in the first place. Here you've got an agreement. And my God, if you want to act, you've got plenty of excuses in the event they do anything.
Absolutely.
That's the first time you already have a chance.
Sending the tank in, not for North Vietnamese forces, but for the South Vietnamese forces.
South Vietnamese, South Vietnamese are taken too, but besides the South Vietnamese guys, we always mention other Vietnamese people. And so it must be heavy. I know the will to do something is significant to this. I think that sometimes we get so tied up in all the agreements provided this and that and the other. And I come back to the fundamental point. Write the agreement as well as you can. But don't believe in them that they say. And as far as we're concerned, we'll keep it provided our annual service. Otherwise, we won't. That's the way it's going to be. And as I see it at the present time, this agreement probably is going to last for a while. Not due to the fact that we made an agreement, but due to the fact that they are in a hell of a spot at the present time, and they aren't going to want to resume this war. Now, is that a fundamental point?
Yes, sir, Mr. President. Among the factors you listed, I think it's fair to list your own record. Because if you did what you did last May 8th, 2 weeks before the summit, and 5 months before the election, if one is in Hanoi, would one want to bet that they could massively violate the DMC, break the ceasefire, break the laws and the Cambodian provisions, all of which they have to do to resume large-scale hostilities without reaction from Europe? That would be one hell of a gap.
Of course, they think they have a madman in the White House, and they're probably right on this issue.
That's true. I could have a mind.
That's right. Let me cover the contingencies quickly, and here, this is for your own information, do it on your own and so forth. First, Admiral Lamar, you know we've had for some time, 3-day strike, 6-day strike, and all that sort of thing, which you know, knowing the event that we wanted to massively escalate. I don't expect this to happen. It may be that they'll be so hard-nosed that we'll have no other choice. And if we have no other choice, I don't want to screw around a plan for a year. We're going to go for a plan that will be enormously effective. In other words, that means continuing the bombing, and it means, that, I mean, continuing the mine, but it means targeting in a way that will be very, very effective, including the use of B-52s over and over.
Yes, including them.
Now, is that clear?
Yes, sir.
That's what I've been a long time. We've been ready to do that. You all, I want you all to be thinking about this, just hoping and praying you don't have to do it. But if we do have to move, we can't move in a half-assed way because the heat we're going to take is going to be so great. We're going to have to move massively and effectively in attempting to break that back where we are here. You have anything to add to that, Henry?
No, I think that's absolutely. We have a number of plans for which we've held out.
I don't think just be sure that I have in this. Remember, as far as air is concerned, 52s. I mean, but over Hanoi, they've never been out there. Now, that'll be a signal. We've got to do something that is different, something that is new, something that's effective. So that's it. The second point has to do with the longer term thing. And that is, it has to do with the contingencies in the event this agreement is not upheld. What do we do? How? When? I need a number of plans on that. In other words, various levels. Because there are various levels of violation. And here's something where I see no problem in here. You're doing these studies. Obviously, you can say that if this agreement comes, we've got to be
Yes, but for that purpose, let me say, we are not going to rely on the International Commission to provide our intelligence. We have to have an independent intelligence capability insofar as violations are concerned.
We're not on that.
I don't think that was the International Commission. I don't think fully understand it, although I talked to General Zavala. And he said he's sending his best kid to live under there because he wants to wipe out those pockets of his car. Now, while we're talking about that, let me digress quickly to another subject in the foreign policy area, Latin America. We have made a shocking mistake, and it's not the mistake of the Defense Department, in allowing, because of our obsession with the idea that all we should do is to provide inside plumbing, more frijoles for peons in Latin America, and more opportunity, et cetera, et cetera. By failing and then leaving to the Latins, who are without question going to continue to build up some military capability, and they have to. And so we let the French furnish their air power and all the rest. This is a hell of a mistake. I want all of you to understand that as far as our military attaches and so forth are concerned, we're going to change that. The Assistant Secretary, incidentally, I think you should know this again, the Assistant Secretary for Latin America, very nice fellow, is going to go. I haven't got any name for him, but he's going to be a hard-line fellow. But in Latin America, we have got to, I want to restore to the best extent that we can American equipment. Where they want to buy American cooperation. So I know you got problems with the French church and the rest, but Mel, you know how strong I feel on this. We have got to do it. It's been a major mistake, and we're going to try to rectify it.
Well, Mr. President, Secretary Smith and I have testified as strong as we could along these lines.
Yeah.
We have not only permitted them to get French aircraft, they got British ships, German missiles. We missed more opportunities down there, not only to sell equipment, but we forced them to now equip themselves so that the logistics are poor. They've got 4 or 5 different kinds of ammunition.
Right.
4 or 5 different kinds.
You know, another thing that this does, I was talking to a fellow who's not in the military with us the other day. He said, you know what this does? When you have German and French and British military equipment in, it means that German, French, and British economic people can now come in and they get a bigger stroke. You see? That's what it was. We're just killing ourselves in Latin America. And the Latins want our stuff. They would prefer our stuff. They prefer the Americans to the rest.
Well, that's right.
One of us would cheaper. Maybe it's the first thing that with the knowledge and consent of the president, he accepted a $1 million bribe from the European government, which he then used to buy ARPA. That's the extent to which he
just remember, that's my feeling. And you can hard line all you want. Now, Mel, you want to have anything to say?
No, I don't think so.
Can you support this agreement, or are you just too much of the pop?
No, I don't think you have anybody.
What do you think?
Let me ask.
Let's talk about this. I know you're building. Let me ask you about the hawks in the House and the Senate. Let us suppose we can get that kind of an agreement. Would they, if two refuses, would they say, under those circumstances, don't sign the agreement, continue the war, hold the funds?
There would be no support for South Vietnam if this agreement ever surfaces to the form that it is. I guarantee you that you can't get the support that's needed if this agreement goes by the boards. And two, I hope understands that, because it just is impossible as a practical political problem.
Well, I hope we're going to have a problem now. Would be cut off in 2 weeks.
Well, then I think we're going to have a problem now. These people are all going to have to support this agreement if they testify up there next year, as they've supported no other agreement, because you're going to have to have this continued military assistance, you're going to have this continued economic aid, and that's going to be a real effort even to do that. You can do it, and we'll be successful. But it's going to be a very difficult job that only can be done if they start right out supporting this whole program.
Mr. President, the Mavic, the things are, I heard a call, not in this room, but in the cabinet room, we were discussing the ceasefire in 68, the
general opportunity. Make it sound.
Is that real big?
It's 10 years.
Yeah.
Depends on how many times I went to the generalissimo.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.
I hope it's all the way to solve. Thank you, everybody. Well, thank you. Thank you. We'll see you there at the early Christmas reception.
We're gonna be there.
Very nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
They're almost very solid, but it's good.
Look forward to it.
Very useful.
Oh, thank you very much. I didn't know they were on the day.
All of them want to talk with you.
Early.
I'm recording it with sound.
I'm like, I'm gonna be using my mom.
You're gonna be here, you're all here.
Yeah, I know.
Still, you're gonna be sort of have to do walk there, but we're having. Yeah, fine, good luck to you. We hope that everything works out with our.
That's right, that's right.
We have a great problem. I have the whole black hat, my T-shirt, I'm gonna do, but.
I really enjoy it.
It's hard, hard to be a black hat in our shop.
Yes.
We go all over the area. The changes there in your shop, Johnson.
See, we're good.
Oh, I get it. Yeah.
Market's like never before.
Yeah.
Long hours.
Yeah.
There's a little park that's hanging off.
I hear you. Well, we gotta get this volunteer. How are you? Good. You think the agreement's all right, Johnson?
Yeah.
All right. Incidentally, I talked to General Westmore, I want to know that I, take my managers to peace. Well, certainly, they want to know, but you can't get the, you can't get everything. This is not a conditional insurance. The main thing we, as we're getting about, well, 100 more degrees. And that's what everybody was, that's what I said.
Yeah.
I